This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 64. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley is the guy who subscribes to more gun magazines than he can ever possibly read. I am Jacob Paulson.
And Jacob is the man whose attention span for anything written is about 300 words or less. I would say it's probably more like 30 words or less.
If you're going to send me something to read, it better be really short.
Believe me, I think I've made that mistake more than once. So today we are so excited to have everybody on the Concealed Carry Podcast, but we most especially because we have a special guest today who's never been on before, and we're just totally thrilled to have him on. And that is Mr. Season 3 Top Shot runner-up Mike Hughes on the podcast today. Welcome, Mike. Say hello.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Thanks, Riley. Thanks, Jacob. Pleasure and honor to be here, fellas.
So Jacob knows, and probably some other listeners know, that I am a huge Top Shot fan. And then you developed this whole product called the CERT pistol. And I am also, I'm probably almost a bigger fan of the pistol than I am of the fact that you are on Top Shot.
That's a good thing. I'd be worried, very concerned if it was otherwise.
So anyway, today we're going to be talking about all kinds of crazy stuff with Mike, especially because we look at him and view him as being a fundamental fiend. Like, as far as, is that the appropriate thing to say? Like, if you ever go and check out, and by the way, we'll be putting some links in the show notes of things to go check out, some links to go visit, but if you ever check out some of Mike's training videos on nextleveltraining.com, they are phenomenal. And as far as learning the fundamentals of shooting and really nailing that stuff down, and of course incorporating the CERT pistol all into that, it's a brilliant thing. But we'll get into that some more. So first of all, in keeping with our usual mode of operandi or modus operandi, today's in history, we had a couple of events that we wanted to point out. So this day in history, Ben Franklin set sail for France in what,
1776.
Yep. Yeah, Jacob, why don't you take that?
Yeah, October 26, 1776. So this is 1 month to the day after he was named an agent of diplomatic commission by the Continental Congress. So Benjamin Franklin's role was very important there. He spent quite a bit of time in France, and a lot of things he did there have been questioned over the years. But at the end of the day, he really brought France in as our ally in the Revolutionary War, and what a critical ally they were. And so, that was a big deal.
I think I mentioned in a recent episode, you know, how he was pretty much like our first Secretary of State. And he was the man when it came to that kind of stuff. Also on this day in history, in 2001, George W. Bush signs the Patriot Act.
Yeah, talk about things that that get people riled up.
Controversial and whatnot. And you know, what inspired this? I mean, today is October 26th. We're actually recording this on October 25th, but the episode is releasing on October 26th. And it was about a month and a half before this that September 11th occurred in 2001, right? And it's just like, boom, you know, total knee-jerk reaction. Like, we can't, you know, have that happen again. And I got a comment here, Jacob. The official name of the Patriot Act is the USA Patriot Act, and most people know it's an acronym, and it is the Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. What's up with Congress making stupid laws sometimes and giving like really, like they feel like they got to give an acronym? Does that make it somehow better? I don't know.
Marketing, bro. It's marketing. It's like, hey, we need to call this the Patriot Act. Somebody come up with an acronym that works for Patriot.
Yeah.
That's it. Then you got to put some Latin in there too, fellas. You know, then you really seal the deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it just dawned on me, Jacob, that wasn't it Ben Franklin that said, you know, something about liberty and security?
That is a good irony. Yeah. I don't remember the quote, but something like that.
I know the quote, but it's just, you know, it on the spot right now. I'm not quite coming up with it, but you folks know what I mean. You know, like he basically said, you know, like we can either give up liberty to have security or give up security to have liberty. Like you pretty much can't.
Here it is. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
There you go. So ironically, like we said, on this day in history, the Patriot Act, which many people think and believe, and I think in a lot of cases, rightfully so, compromised a lot of liberties for some security. Has it kept us safe? Who knows? Probably, but at what cost? All right, moving on. So we really don't want to, you know, stay off topic here. Or at least we don't want to waste any more time getting into the topic with Mike Hughes today. And once again, thank you, Mike, for joining us. Today's episode, it should be mentioned, and Mike probably didn't necessarily know this, but you know, it only makes sense, is brought to you by the CERT training pistol from Next Level Training. So we sell those in our store. Mike sure sells them. I'm sure you can get them from him too. But
there is one other thing I'd like to announce before we get into the meat of today's episode. And that is that tomorrow night, Thursday, October 27th at 7 p.m. Mountain, we are going to have a special webinar. If you'd like the chance to see Mike Hughes face-to-face and listen to and chime in on this webinar, this is part of a new launch of what we have labeled as Guardian Nation Live, which is a once-a-month webinar with top industry professionals and is only going to be open to members of Guardian Nation. And we'll have some more specifics about this towards the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that so you get all the details. But I just want to make sure you put it on your radar and that you go check it out because, you know, this is actually, you know, it's happening tomorrow. You have no time really to, you want to make sure you get on the list, that you get your spot reserved in tomorrow evening's webinar together with Mike Hughes, myself, and Jacob Paulson from the Concealed Carry Podcast. And Mike's going to be bringing a lot of really great stuff to the table. I am super excited for this webinar. It is tomorrow evening, October 27th, 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And you've got to get pre-registered or you will not get the link or anything to which you'll be able to attend the webinar. So to do that, please go to usafirearmtraining.com/GN, as in Guardian Nation. usafirearmtraining.com/GN.
Let's get into today's topic. First of all, we want to kick it off by giving Mike the opportunity to introduce yourself a little bit. Well, tell us a little bit about where you got started.
Yeah, no, great, great. Well, essentially, I mean, I got into the firearms industry more just for recreation. I was a big dumb football player and engineer, and got diverted in life, went to law school. And I think after that, competitive venues, you know, life gets, you know, a little bit unfulfilled, and you need some kind of a competition to keep the mind and body and spirit sharp. So competitive shooting, I really found to be the thing. I mean, there's a lot of longevity to the sport. There's a lot of speed and accuracy, a lot of power, particularly with the action pistol shooting, more in the venues of USPSA, IDPA, and things of that nature. So that really started things off of my love for pistol craft, just as a lifestyle, fellas.
Yeah, I think if I actually was mentioning this to Jacob before we got you into the recording room here. I said, I think if you were to describe Mike with one word, and I might change that now with two words, I would say that those two words, the first word was intense, and the second word is competitor. Is that an accurate description of you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like a lot of us, we've got to channel our personality flaws and to be least destructive and maybe better productive. So yeah, slightly obsessive compulsive. And I think when that's channeled and exploding in the right direction, you know, we could be positive. So I guess you could say intense or OCD, either way.
I mean, either way, we appreciate what you've accomplished. You know, it was interesting, Mike, because the more I learn about you, the more you're intriguing, right? Because you've applied yourself in various different venues. You know, here we're talking about pistol shooting, and that's probably the thing you're best known for. But really, you've competed on a variety of platforms over the years, and you're just a strong competitor.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. I think competing, it's funny you mentioned that because I'm coaching my little guys now in sixth grade, head coaching a lion's share of my time. And I really try to instill with them the essence of competition because I got a little bit of a countercultural view on that. And it's very broadly applicable to matter what chapter you are in your life. Competition, it's so much less about the winning and focusing on the things upstream to that win. And what I mean by that is when you're really competing, like say in college football or even in shooting or nationals, when I really feel like I'm crushing it, I'm not concerned about the end result. You're so obsessed with the details. And I'm not talking about paralysis by analysis. You know, I'm talking about like living in that void, you know, the five rings of Miyamoto Musashi, that pure just right in that moment that when you do pull a W, it's a byproduct of the preparation and execution. So, you know, I think sometimes competition is, you know, sometimes I think competition is misinterpreted the dark side of it, of fear of losing. You know, people aren't really competitive. They're just so damn fear of losing where I don't really have that. I don't give a hoot sometimes the outcome. Like I did some competitive bodybuilding with my wife and I got last place every time, you know, but I got leaned out like crazy, you know, and it helped me get faster foot speed and everything. So I think, and I'll be too long-winded here, I think that essence of competition is more the preparation and execution, Coach Valero used to say, you know, and the end product is always just a byproduct, you know, of getting the W's or success or the achievement, you know, however that measure comes. So yes, a competitor, yeah, but maybe not how some people normally look at the word.
Yeah, I get the sense that for you, and this is, I think, how I feel a lot about it as well, but I get the sense that for you that the satisfaction you get from competing is less, and I think that's what you're saying here, is less from the win and more from everything else you do up to that point. The satisfaction of seeing progress that you make, the satisfaction of just simply even doing the best that you possibly can, and then trying to level that up to the next level even still. Am I reading you at all that correctly there?
You are 100% correct. I mean, the gratification, it's what I try to tell these kids too, like really the true essence of achievement. There's a planning component to it. It's planning and execution and the grit just to get out there and do it. As an example, a few years ago, I've kind of taken a sabbatical from competitive shooting, but I wanted to get top 10 in the nation in production. You know, given my lifestyle and everything and all the, you know, irons in the fire, I want to get top 10 in production. Yeah, no, honestly, I wanted to win production, right? You know, shoot for that, but you got to be a little realistic on it too, right? But anyways, so, you know, what do you do about that? You just show up and kind of wish and pray for that? No, you make a game plan. I went 16 weeks upstream. I had a very disciplined schedule. It was about 1,000 rounds a week and a heck of a lot of dry fire and morning and AM workouts, like 15 minutes. I had a deficiency analysis in my local matches. I came back and worked on those deficiencies of awkward shooting, whatever humbled me, which was frequent, you know. And, you know, you come back, you get seventh place. I was really pleased with that. I was pleased with the performance, and I was more pleased with the process. If I would have, you know, just showed up and got fifth, and no one really showed up who competed or what have you, or I got first and no one in that process wasn't there, I don't think it'd be fulfilling. I think it would be just kind of empty, hollow.
Mm. Yeah. I'm glad we talked about competition because I think it's a really valid point. And probably in the webinar, Mike, tomorrow, we haven't talked much about the webinar yet, but tomorrow we're going to have you on a webinar. And one of the questions that I'm going to be asking you is, you know, how do we bridge competitive shooters to self-defense shooters? So I'll let you be pondering on that for the next 24 hours. Right. Tomorrow in our webinar, I'm going to make you talk about that. But let's talk about, I would like to go back to what you were saying about how you would go, you would compete, you'd kind of get some feedback, you'd be humbled, and then you'd make changes. Can you point at one, and we can talk about many, but I'll call it fundamental or technique or something that you had to change, something you were doing wrong that probably a lot of shooters, maybe myself, are doing wrong that makes all the difference?
Oh, I could jump on that. One of the biggest things right off the bat is grip. I am almost OCD on grip. I think it is the most important and unappreciated fundamental. I think it gets glossed over too quickly, and that stone doesn't get placed early on in the temple, and the temple can't get too high, okay, without it. So, but to that end, with grip, some of the deficiencies is grip establishment. And let me tell you my journey on that. You know, I'm all a believer in a 1,000-mile journey, you know, Kaizen every day. Just get a little bit better every day and have it add up, right? Well, with grip, I was trying to, and I still have this elusive measure of just take an A zone, all right, in an IPSC target. And, you know, it's 15 by 28 centimeters. You can argue if that's a combat accuracy, big enough, small enough, whatever, but let's just pick something because it's out there. Well, my goal is to draw, boom, get, you know, a bill drill at 20 yards, you know, a sub, you know, 1700 splits, you know, really ripping it, where the muzzle returns down to a consistent location, an objective, a grip. All right. And boom, 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 all within that acceptable accuracy zone. Okay. That's my lofty objective. I think it's humanly possible. So to get to that objective, Riley, I went down this dark path of trying to use my fingertips to really adjust the nature of the pressure on the pistol so it'd be consistent, to achieve that objective. And what I found is that I turned the 1,000-mile journey into a 10,000-mile journey. What I mean is, and you kind of imagine this, if you're just sitting there, you know, like if you have your fingertips pressing here, there, you know, left, right, you know, twisting, twerking, all this, like real fine motor skills. And it's almost like you're trying to, you know, master your basketball shot, you know, it's real fine touch. Mm-hmm. And what I found with a pistol with 12,000 PSI explosion in your hands and all the variables, that MO did not work. I turned the 1,000-mile journey into a 10,000-mile journey. You know, so I really had to take a big step back and think, okay, how do I achieve this objective? Two objectives with grip. That first shot lands right where you're seeing. Second objective of grip, all follow-up shots are right around there, you know, right on top of each other. Okay, those are my two main objectives. My everything evolves around that. Well, I can jump into the punchline, or you can ask another, you know, feel free to interject a question. But what I found is just invoking big dumb muscles, very robust gripping style, was the path to mastery. Because if you try to use your fingertips and like real fine little skills, you know, Tuesday is different from Thursday. And you can, because you got to remember with pistol craft, there's no warm up. And this is whether you're a defensive shooter or a competitive shooter, your warm up is limited. So you don't have the chance to get on the court or get on the mat and warm up. You got to be ready to go. So your skills have to be aligned with that environment of no warm up. Yeah. You get no calibration. You know, I loathe it when people go to the, okay, first get warmed up before you start your shooting training. No, you're in a pristine shape. Don't warm up. You know, take advantage of that pristine, uncalibrated state, right? So anyways, we can go more details on that. I don't want to, you know, run to, but grip is a big one, and big dumb muscles on the grip are critical to achieve those objectives.
Actually, I think that's huge. I'm so glad that we opened this box. Did you have other people who other coaches or mentors or people who are trying to constantly tell you how to do it, and you had to pick through all the various advices or you know, areas of thought, or did you just kind of adapt to figure that out? Hey, big dumb muscles.
You know, actually, you know, it's a good mentor. Early on, it was like 04, 05. I just started shooting, and I had an initial instructor named Tom Stidham, who is really good, really got some fundamentals in and got on the right path. And another instructor I went and traveled to, was Matt Briquette. And, you know, Briquette really, he understands pistol craft very well. And he just focused first day just on grip, you know, 7 hours just focusing on grip, you know, and that was very instrumental. I, you know, paid a lot of money for that, but it was a good, solid investment to start off on the right path. And I've certainly tried to give him credit, you know, where credit's due going forward on that. And that was instrumental. I kind of went rogue and really tried to figure it out, you know, afterwards, with the fine motor skills, you know, cause you can, like I said, if you push, you just put your fingers over your knuckles and you push here, push there, you know, you can have minor force adjustments that are different, but it's so hard to do that when you're unwarmed up. Whereas another influential person is a guy named Larry Yatch, who was a former SEAL, and he told me a C-clamp grip. And if you look at some of our videos, you know, online, I espouse this a lot because I really like it. Instead of bringing your fingertips in, you just push them straight back. And I'll show this on the webinar, actually. You know, we can get a little more video on it. I think it's something worth trying out to have a better it's just better use of anatomy because your fingertips don't get in play. I'll reserve more comment on that later as far as the technique. But point being, C-clamp grip, chest squeeze, I learned from Rodney May, squeezing the base of the thumbs together. If there's just two stones to get in the jar, you push straight back in the front without fingertips, you know, in front of those second knuckles pressing into the front of the gun. You have chest squeeze, squeezing your base of your thumbs together, and your base of your thumbs are relaxed. Again, let's go on this in the webinar where we can get the video or the webinar. But those were the things I've kind of stumbled on, you know, bringing together from those instructors, which absolutely has jacked my performance up. And I just want to make sure every shooter starting out at least considers and ponders these questions. Don't take it as a gospel. You know, you got to prove it to yourself. Otherwise, you want to buy them. but I think it'll be extremely important to put you on the glide path for mastery of the pistol.
Wow. Good stuff. In fact, there's a lot of what you're saying that for me is like really hitting home. It's very much resounding. Yes, you know, in my mind is going on here as you're explaining some of these things. And the reason for that, and I didn't prep you with this before, Mike, is that I am going to be in a competition coming up here in a couple of months, a national competition, and I've never done anything like that before. I don't know. Have you heard of the American Marksman competition?
You know, I've generally heard of that, but yeah, please tell me more details on that.
Yeah, it's a nationwide competition. They started with local qualifiers, and they had regional championships, and then deciding from there the top 36 competitors that are competing at nationals in Alabama come January. It's intended, though, only for amateur competitive shooters, those that have never ranked at certain levels in other, you know, divisions or categories, you know, USPSA or IPSC or you know, IDPA or whatever. And so I've never officially, you know, done a lot of, you know, organized competitive shooting. And so I jumped in on that and have done, you know, pretty well so far. I got through the local qualifier just fine, won my regional championship, four divisions. There's men's open, women's open, junior, and LE/military. And I won our Rocky Mountain championships in the LE category, as I am a part-time law enforcement officer. So, yeah, I'm going to Talladega, Alabama, come January. So I've been really thinking and pondering and practicing a lot and trying a lot of different things, trying to master some of these skills. So I really appreciate you taking the time to go into some depth on some of that, and I will look forward to seeing even more in the webinar come Thursday evening.
Riley's taking good notes.
Very much so. Very much so. So there's a lot of things, you know, I'm familiar with and I've read and I've studied, but, you know, I still have so far to go. But relating to that, this was a thought or a question that I had that I wanted to ask you about. You know, being that you are really just a master competitor, I think, is that like your, I think your whole life, from my perspective, I could be totally wrong in this, but, and based on comments that you've made, I feel like your life revolves around competition in like in a positive way. You know, like some people can just take competition too far, of course, and it can, you know, wreck their lives. But I think you are constantly always striving to, I mean, you mentioned a word that I am very intimately familiar with as I spent several years over in Japan, and that was Kaizen. Oh, and yeah. So like I'm getting that perspective and that mindset, I think, and understanding it very well. So my question though for you is, as that I am trying to prepare for this competition, is what do you think are the most important, like we talk about shooting fundamentals, pistol, you know, fundamentals or whatever. We tend to talk about six or seven, you know, of these shooting fundamentals. My question for you is, and I'm going to try to put you on the spot with this one, is out of the basic shooting fundamentals, which ones do you think, and we already got one of them, and that was grip. Which do you think are the most important fundamentals? For shooting accurately and also balancing that with speed?
Yeah, I can. No, I'll very much tee off on that. And I'll, you know, of course, there's a lot of opinion evolved around that. And some of it too, it's like, you know, which son do you love your most? You know what I mean? It's kind of a hard question to ask, because they all got to be there. But if you do have to prioritize, and let's say you're an instructor and you got to really, like, you know, put some emphasis on one or the other, or figure out which order to teach him, obviously it's grip first. Grip's the foundation, and it's grip with an objective-based approach. That first shot goes where you're looking at. In other words, you have good grip established, a good natural point of aim, and your follow-up shots, you have recoil management, you return that muzzle down consistently. Once those are established, then I think everything else falls in place. And I'll say why I order that. Why grip in front of stance? Well, stance is very dynamic. Stance, you could be walking. Stance is almost mental. I've seen people stand so upright, but yet their body doesn't rock back, you know, and do the typewriter, as I call it, you know, pop, 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 bing, you know, and then rock back forward, you know. So stance is, and it's fairly easy to teach too. And I can go over that in the webinar, the little almost basketball drill. And then why grip over sight alignment? Well, if you have a good grip, guess what? Your sights are there. you beat up, boom, and all of a sudden you pull your focus back when you need it, and you're already there because you've done so many reps with grip establishment that your sights are already there. Then it's a 1,000-mile journey of knowing when you need your sights, okay, while you're presenting the pistol. If I'm presenting 20 yards out in an 8-inch plate or an 8-inch target, whatever that may be, boom, I'm already pulling my vision back to my sights while presenting. So sights, it's not so much sight alignments. I mean, that's pretty basic. It's knowing when to use your sights and what degree you need. It's a floating degree. It's more detailed there, right? Because you don't always need a crisp sight picture, right? You know, it doesn't always need to be a perfect sight picture. So that's why grips over sights. Is grip over trigger control? Yes, because if you have a lockdown grip, honestly, you can get away with some crummy trigger control. Yeah, I hate to say it, but you can't. A strength will mask a weakness. Henceforth, shoot strong hand only sometimes, not only practically if you need to, or, you know, because you're disabled or with the hand got disabled or the competition requires it, but shooting strong hand only and support hand only, or second strong hand only, you're isolating your trigger control. It's on an island. It's by itself, right? You don't have that other hand to mask a weakness. So, and as you, if people, you know, features aren't familiar, trigger control definition is breaking shots without disturbing the muzzle. Very simple in principle, but very, very, very difficult to execute, right?
Yeah.
So that being said, and again, I won't be too long-winded here, but I think I want to take this opportunity, since the topic's fundamentals, to go in great depth. So if the, you know, listener out there is not into this, boom, bail, because this is going to be the MO for the whole deal. You know, great solid depth and these incredibly important fundamentals, no matter where you live in the shooting community, as far as your passions. But, you know, to finish this off, the second one will be trigger control. After a grip, you've got to be able to break that damn trigger and not disturb that muzzle. And I'll show this in the webinar. I'm going to take some notes right now. I have a trick I learned, and I might have to claim this as an original trick. Since you don't push straight back, if you're a right-handed shooter, you push back and outside up above your right ear. You exaggerate the pull, so you ultimately push it straight back because you have joints. You don't have a full-on solenoid-like actuator in your trigger finger, right? You got rotary motion devices trying to push something straight back, right? Mm. Kind of a crazy design in these firearms. But so it takes a lot of reps and trigger control. And honestly, not to do a shameless plug here, that's where our cert, one of the areas it shines. You pick it up, you get 5-second drill, strong hand only, and then the clock or light switch across your wall, you know, across your room. And boom, 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 you rip them off fearlessly and you get those dots, not dashes. You know, that kind of Kaizen, 1,000-mile journey, you know, 7 workouts a day on that. Yeah, 7 workouts at 5 seconds, soup to nuts, right? I mean, literally 5 seconds, fellas. That's the pathway to mastery of trigger control. But anyways, I'm a little off point there. It does fall just behind grip, you know, and then really from there, I think the sight alignment.
Mike, I'm going to interrupt you.
Go ahead, please.
Just because there's one other shameless plug I was hoping you were going to make that I don't know if you totally made it. Can you talk quickly? Speaking of trigger control, and I know that I'm breaking in the middle of a thought process, but talk about the take-up laser on the cert, because I think a lot of people don't know how powerful that can be as a tool relative to that fundamental.
Yeah. The take-up laser, I mean, essentially, I built a cert, designed it originally, and this cert is for shot-indicating resetting trigger. Inert gun, completely inert, built from the ground up, you know, but, you know, try to build as highest quality as possible, as tough as possible for defensive tactic training and stuff. And there's two lasers. First laser on the original 110 model, which has functional features of a Glock 17-22 and almost like a 19 as well, which is what I shoot. The lower laser activates when the trigger is prepped. That is the trigger essentially goes halfway. And if anyone shot a striker fired gun, you know, you kind of push it and then it, boom, it kind of stops in the middle, so to speak. And it requires additional amount of force to boom, break that and, you know, start the firing sequence. Well, I've always felt it was very important to have an appreciation for that because it's not a linear amount of force, right? You know, you go at a flat level, it stops abruptly, the force jumps up, you know, for given the amount of travel, you have a little bit of creep in there, and then boom. So you have, you know, about 2.5 pounds of prep and about a 5.5 pound break, right? So that's a very odd, tool to our body to interface with and build the extreme precision we need to not disturb that muzzle when we break that shot. So, you know, the technology warrants some addressing that, the idiosyncrasies of a striker fired gun. So the laser activates when you prep the trigger, the lower laser. The shot indicating laser activates after you break the shot, when you fully depressed. All right. And it stays on when it's fully depressed. That's an important feature as well. Okay. So why is that important? Now that we have the features down, what's the benefits? Well, fellas, a few things. First off, when you're coming into a target, all right, you know, prep that laser coming into a target when you are prepared to destroy everything within that time of prepping, if that makes sense, okay? You know, get your finger on there, take up the slack, all right? Get calibrated on that position and force to get there. So less force, less time is taken to break that shot and cook off a round, all right? Now you can see that. You don't really know if you're doing that unless you have a laser to really tell you, okay? And but the lower, there's two lasers, all right? The lower laser is out of sight picture. It's more just to see with your off eye. Get a general sense of when you're doing that. And you don't always have it on either. Otherwise, it will be a distractant, okay? So a second drill, so to speak, is you reset and you reprep as quickly as possible. In other words, you break the shot. A common deficiency I see is they break the shot. The finger comes all the way off the trigger, sometimes out of the trigger guard even. Mm. Well, geez, you know, during that recoil cycle, you got to reset. That means if trigger comes forward, you hear the distinctive click to where it's ready to reignite to start another firing, you know, sequence. And then you reprep, you get right on it. So essentially, what's that mean? That lower red laser, the take-up laser, it doesn't turn off. You try to keep it on all the time, okay? Or very little, reset, reprep. So I'll stop there. There's a few more drills and a very important safety drill with the take-up laser. But I don't – you guys want to interject or clarify anything? I don't know. Sometimes I get in the soup and I leave some gaps.
I thought that was so important because it's amazing to me. If you're listening to this podcast right now, I hope you're understanding. You know, we're Mike is teaching us some huge, awesome fundamentals, and there's massive value in there. But if you have a cert or if you don't have a cert, you just need to go buy one. But if you can understand why the tool is designed, I think it helps you understand, you know, the value of the tool. Like as we discuss these fundamentals, it gives you an idea of the person who designed the tool designed it with these fundamentals in mind. And so as you were talking about trigger control and, you know, essentially break the trigger without moving the muzzle, I was thinking about the take-up laser and how I often will sit down with a student and I turn on the take-up laser and they start to depress. And then I just see the red jump, right? Like I just see that laser move on the target. And it's a phenomenal diagnostic. I think I had to make you talk about it. So I'm glad I did.
No, I so appreciate that, Jacob. I mean, your ball's on there. It's and you hit the word diagnostic. I mean, that's a word we use all the time, you know, because a bullet hole is a moment in time, right? A fraction of a second. What happened upstream from that hole, right? Where did the muzzle go? Like you just mentioned, did that lower red laser move initially and then even move more between as they both came on, the prep and the break? Obviously, a tall tale sign of a trigger mechanic issue. You can look at it, you diagnose it. It's very identifiable to the student, even to ourselves as we train ourselves. Don't let those lasers move. Lower one comes on, upper one breaks. Very simple, very understandable, very digestive, very, very intuitive for nearly anyone. But if we just look at going the range and at bullet holes, yeah, we have other confusion of the boom and all that. And you know what? I'm a recoil fan. Like I totally am not displacing live fire. That's one of our key messages. But the diagnostics are critical. You know, it's so critical. Otherwise, some people miss low left. It's a rarity, but sometimes they have bad sight alignment or muzzle alignment. You know, it's low left or it's a grip deficiency. They point out, they point in low left, break the shot. Well, guess what? You can see right with the lasers. Like, hey, you pointed to the low left, you broke in the low left. So you don't have a trigger mechanic issue, buddy. It's a grip issue, your grip establishment. You know, if we're doing a natural point of aim drill, for example, yeah, like breaking the shot fearlessly. So anyways, I guess that dovetails is talking about diagnostics and how critical it is, how every rep. And I guess let me go one more thing, guys, and let me know. You know, this is where I get excited is you know, when we talk about pistol training, in fact, I'm really going to run with this because this is where I'm, this is the heart of everything, you know, and it kind of dovetails into what you said, like the difference between, you know, combat shooters and competitive shooters and the merger of it. The biggest deficiency I saw in training about, I guess, 7-8 years ago now is, you know, the lack of it being a lifestyle. There's all these barriers to entry of getting to the range, getting the range back. You go in 20, 30 cents around, you know, and no diagnostics, you know, very little planning going to the range. And such. And boy, we just don't get anything out of it, you know? And I look at our skill level across our country in shooting and I compare it to high school basketball athletes. Okay. Let's say an alien comes down and he looks at us and he says, like, wow, tell me about these humans. He comes to some viceroy or something, right? And you're like, oh, well, you know, here's some athletes or young humans. What do? Well, they do like 20-foot jump shots or 10-foot jump shots. Oh, that's a tremendous skill. Yeah, they got it. Well, what do the SWAT team guys do? Oh, they just got to, whatever. You know, I'm going to pick on law enforcement a little bit here, but, you know, they got to go in with guns and save people. Oh, what's their skill level? Well, you know, we have 16% hit rates and this and that and misses and training is this much and budget and admin only allocates this much training and they get picked on by the media and this and that, you know. Really? So wait a minute. Why is a basketball athlete in high school so much, if you really could compare it, trying to create it to apples as far as the athletic endeavor, right? Why are they so much more advanced, so to speak, in their skill compared to, say, like a law enforcement officer? And I'm not picking on law enforcement. I'm not saying that, you know, that officer, you got to, you know, this and that. I'm saying, like, look, the whole nature of it, the whole system is we got issues here. And I think part of it is because we don't have, you know, we got to get in our culture, like in Switzerland a little bit, you know, like, look, we shoot, it's what we do. We got to get it. So, you know, imagine, fellas, if we had to drive to the stadium and pay 30 cents a round every free throw we did, we wouldn't have any talent in basketball. And I'm just picking on basketball as one sport, right? Well, we got to lower the barriers to entry to train. That's why I built the cert, fellas. So you pick it up and you get your reps in. You know, and then you reserve what you need to train on the range, your recoil management, your slide lock stimulus, your malfunction recognition and clearance. You know, then you devote to that. But otherwise, your upstream fundamentals, your solid grip, your grip establishment, your awkward shooting positions, your trigger control, your getting in awkward shootings in and out of those positions, your draw, your clearing your garment, your reloads, not the stimulus for reloads, but just hitting a reload. You know, work those off the range. Make it your lifestyle. You know, so anyways, I'll get off my soapbox now, but I see, I just see such potential for our country, everyone in the free world, to bring pistol craft as part of your ethos, part of your Kaizen daily drills, you know, and it's not an extra hour. We're talking extra 20 second drills daily, you know, and if I could just vision cast how good people can get with the right upstream training and the right follow up addiction, you know, to nailing their light switch across your room, you know, and doing that 5 times a day for a whopping 30 seconds of training. I just hope that some listener out there, if I can reach one of them, you know, it's going to be a win. This whole, you know, cast. So, anyway. Yeah,
Huge. That is so massively valuable, right? I mean, I've never, ever heard anyone describe it that way. You just blew my mind, Mike. Like when you said, if it costs 30 cents every time you practiced a jump shot, we would have no talent, you know, on the basketball courts. Like that did it for me. Like when you said it that way, it hit me. I was like, I get it. I mean, I've always understood, you know, just the basic idea that, hey, we need, you know, we got to build fundamentals. We need dry fire because the range is expensive and difficult and inconvenient and all that stuff. And not to mention dangerous, you know, train certain skills.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you described it that way, it just brought it home for me like it never has before.
No, I appreciate that. I found a good role there. That was probably the best I've ever stated that.
Nice.
That message. Feld. I mean, I'll let you run to the next question there, because whenever I say, you know, that statement, about 1,000 other things run through my mind, more bunny trails, but I don't want to go into more detail without losing that message of making training a lifestyle and not putting false barriers to entry. You know, you live fire more the more you do with the cert. And that's just a fact. People go to the range more because they develop more skills. And I want to go in the range and see it or hit this competition, like you say, you know? So it's very much a preparatory phase to bring it to the range and ultimately bring the range to, you know, some practical environments like, you know, defensive shootings in your home and things like that, which is why we're big advocates of training in your home. So you know it, you know, where the non-ballistic walls are, your kids are behind the walls and such like that.
Yeah. Wow. That was seriously some good stuff. You were also kind of rocking my world over here, both with what Jacob pointed out, but also, like, I was just thinking about, you mentioned, like, even if I just did five reps of drawing my cert pistol and aiming at the light switch on the wall 30 seconds a day, like, that doesn't seem like much, but over time it adds up, doesn't it?
It adds up for two reasons. First of all, general adult learning theory and, you know, learning models and all that from an academic perspective, distributed learning, generally speaking, distributed learning works better than block learning. Okay. And I don't totally buy off on that principle, because I know when I went on ski vacations as a kid, that block learning 4 days in a row had huge influence, you know, but, distributed learning, like small little learning over time, does help, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, free training, so to speak, you know, you're on the phone, you're doing something else, you grab the cert off your table. That's the big thing. You got to have it on your table, visible. Whether you're, you know, a soccer mom or a, you know, a 10th group or, you know, in a group or something like that, you know, you got to have it on the table, you know, to give you a kind of a stimulus. Hey, let me grab that and get a quick rep in, you know, tuck it in, you know, appendix carry and get a rep. So, but the other part about distributed learning, 10 second training, the bigger point, let me really emphasize this. The shooter is uncalibrated. Remember I talked before about warming up? Remember we talked about what's right. The environment like? You don't get a warm up in shooting. Whether a defensive shooter or it's the first match at 8 a.m., you know? You did a little bit on the dry fire table, but you're not warmed up, you know? And people say, now that I got that first stage done, I'm ready now. No, screw that. Be ready that first stage. You know, your first shot's there. Your numbers are there. You grab that timer when you're done from the RO and you say, hey, what was my first shot? What was my transitions? What was my this? God, why did it take 2.3 seconds from here to there? That should be a 1.9, you know? You know, you got to train unwarmed up to function unwarmed up. It's same thing like with basketball in a way. Like you got to train at speed, you know, to get to speed. Let me reserve that for later because it's a little bit different topic. But you got to be in those environments, you know. And I was looking at your guys' articles a little bit on training in adverse conditions. It's another topic. I don't want to go sprawled out there, but I've tried, for example, to train in extreme cold in t-shirts. You know, I'm looking at one of your things from Matthew a few days ago, right? Training in adverse conditions. And, you know, sometimes there's physiological restraints. Like when your hands are super cold, you're going to have a 10%, 15% time accuracy deficiency. You know, I've tried a year to outdo that. It's a natural, you know, but I'm getting a little bit thin here, guys, a little bit sprawled. I apologize. Well,
you kind of touch on, you know, like why I frequently train to shoot with gloves on, because, you know, I might be on duty as an officer in the cold and I'm wearing gloves, and now I need to also use my tools, you know, with gloves on. So, you know, like even when it's beautiful, nice weather, I still will wear the gloves. Not that I don't train without those gloves, you know, or with them off, because you got to do both. It's kind of, you know, you got to train and prepare for all the potential variables. And I like a lot of what you say about train cold so that you can, you know, shoot cold, so that you can perform cold. That is really, I don't think I've ever really grasped that, you know, like concept in that way, in how you put it, as far as like having the cert pistol just sitting out on your desk, out on your table, and then you know, every so often you just kind of randomly pick it up and do a drill like that. You make such a good point there. It's so true, because it's in those moments when you're not really thinking about, like, you're not actually mentally necessarily all the time, you know, thinking through all the things you're going to do and how you're going to do them perfectly. Like, it's like, to me, that's almost like a test of just, you know, all right, boom, grab, go, you know, like, and yep. you can quickly see and evaluate and measure, you know, how you're doing and the progress that you're making based on how well you can perform cold and unprepared, basically.
Yep. Cold. And just so we don't confuse the listeners, cold as an unwarmed up, right, not right. physiological yeah. cold, not temperature cold.
Yeah. Thanks for the
No, totally. Yep. No, you're totally right. I mean, you know, and mind you, like training is always it's a pie, right? There's a lot of different areas and balance between different, you know, the biggest deficiency in training in general is imbalance. People focus on one thing too much, whether it's too much push and not a pull or what have you. So, you know, we're not saying exclusively cold. There's times to really drill down. There's times to be holistic, times to do isolation drills. But the biggest deficiency is people don't train warmed up, because let's face it too, logistically, if you go to the range, okay, your first drill is cold. Most people blow it and they don't take advantage of that, which is tragic. All right. But after that, you're warmed up, you know, but hell, you already spent, you know, you drove an hour, you already got there, you already set up targets. Your bookends are probably at least 30 minutes to an hour on either side of that range day. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, you got to get a lot of reps in, yeah. right? So you don't do distributed learning. It's more block learning and it's not very frequent at that generally. So yeah, training cold, that's where the cert, I want to make a shameless plug here, but, and honestly, here's a worse plug. That's why I just highly recommend people get more than one. Have one, even if it's a performer, right? You know, it's a red laser polymer slide, you know, it's only about $200 or so. Have it on your table, right? And if you have kids around or such, great. Tell them not to touch it. If your kids pick it up, they better have their damn finger off that trigger and have muzzle awareness, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's not a toy, but it's not lethal. It's in that right, I don't call it a tweener zone, I call it the perfect zone, you know, because, you know, it has that heft, like you treat it like, particularly if you have a pro model with a little more heft than metal slide and such, it just, you know, people give it that instant respect, you know, picking it off the table, you know, but, and again, I don't want to get deluded talking about, you know, the kid training, but point being is, you have a second one, it's on your table, it has to be on your table, even for us here at NLT, if it's in our bag, we don't use it. When it's out on the table, I see it. I'm even like right now, I'm breaking protocol. I don't have it right on my little table in my little marketing room, you know. And, you know, I tuck it in, you know, boom, I get a few reps. The only thing is, I just want to put a safety caution, is make sure there's no weapons confusion. And probably the biggest safe thing you can do is always have a good ballistic wall or a corner of your house, an exterior wall. You know, don't put it in, you know, bathroom or kids' room in the behind that wall, all right? Because mm-hmm. we got to have 1,000 batting average on no catastrophic safety injuries, you know, with the cert. So, yeah. So, you know, plan ahead, you know weapons, all that, make it convenient. But generally people don't conceal carry in their house. You know, if you do, make special provisions for that, you know, but yeah, tuck it in. And another little controversial point, I just tuck it in without a holster appendix. And why do I do that? Because it's not a training scar, because I'm not doing that with my live fire gun. It's a convenience thing. I'm going to tuck it in my pants. And at least get a concealed carry draw. Boom. You know, clear my garment. Boom. Establish grip. Cook it off. Get 4 rounds. You know, feel good. Feel bad. Whatever results of those rounds. You know, and one more time. God, I feel bad. I'm getting a little mile wide and an inch deep here. But the other big thing with those uncalibrated quick trainings is you generally are a little bit more in tune with how it feels in your hand. All right. So you boom. You cook it off. It's low left. All right. Because you had a bad grip establishment. You make a little quick correction. You grip the gun and you say, okay, that's how it should feel, right? And then you go back, because you kind of get numb to that after too much training, so to speak. Wow. You know? So I'm a huge advocate of a natural point of aim drill. And, okay, I'm going to put one more concept out here, your permission to fail card. So you have that light switch 10 yards away across your room. You fearlessly cook off around and you try to natural point of aim that light switch beyond your abilities, all right? If you're lucky once, you don't just put the cert away and think, oh, I'm never going to shoot again. Boy, I'm a master, you know? No, you know. Okay, yeah, sometimes you luck out, right? But point being is you fearlessly cook off that round on a, you know, kind of an aim small, miss small, but in this case, it's natural point of aim, kinesthetic aim, right? You know, is how it feels in your hands. You rigorously analyze how it felt, how the grip establishment felt, you know, in your hands. And then you just kind of log that away. And it's truly Kaizen. you know, and then the next time you do it, you do it after a week. Geez, you got like, you know, how many 25, you know, 35 little sessions in, and that's just a week. Imagine a year, you know, and a 1,000-mile journey. And imagine now, because there's no longevity issue on pistol craft. You're 60, you've done it for 30 years, and you've done it right for 30 years, right? I mean, I'm getting a little squirrely here, guys. But bringing it back to point, unwarmed up, absolutely, is something that anyone and everyone should be doing with their pistol craft training.
You're touching on something there that has direct application even to defensive shooting. And I know we're going to maybe, you know, have you talk a little bit more about that during the webinar, since we prepped you with a question on that. But defensive shooting is very much not being warmed up at all. So just throwing that out there. Let's shift the focus just a little bit here. To maybe a little bit more fun discussion, and maybe we can come back to a couple other things. So, sure. We've got somebody here in the office actually that wanted to know this question. So, Top Shot, Mike. What was the most difficult shooting challenge during Top Shot?
Oh God. Yeah. Well, let's broaden it out. What's the most difficult challenge is probably sitting in a van for hours, you know, the downtime, you know, I hugely respect, you know, first responders and, you know, people hitting that and have, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I don't want to demean that at all, but I'd kind of suffered from a PMSD, you know, post-mundane stress disorder after Top Shot, you know, just like complete and utter lack of stimulus, you know, for 6 weeks, you know, it was absolutely brutal on my mind, you know, not having a stimulus, you know, not reading a book, not no outside contact. You just, here looking at these other humans, you know, for weeks and weeks. So, you know, shooting's fine. You step up, you compete, you do it. I guess the most frustrating thing for me on that is, you know, you don't train, you don't have any warm up. You just kind of go up and do it, you know? And I get it. It's entertainment. Top Shot's a fantastic show. It promotes firearms in a positive light. You know, people complain about the drama, but the drama is what makes a show. I mean, let's face it. I don't get questions on. In fact, that was amazing. Your question. I thought you were going to go different directions, more drama related. Like, why didn't you punch Jake in the face or things like that? And you know, but I guess I went too broad there. I guess the most difficult shooting challenges. Obviously it was a shotgun. You know, I misaligned sights. I used the wrong thing, and I wasn't trained up. I didn't put the time with it as I ever should have, sure. You know, upstream.
Sure.
And I was looking, you know, I mean, well, if you really want to know specifics.
You're referring to that finale, right? Against.
Oh, yeah.
And you were missing some shots there in the shotgun, right?
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, Dustin nailed it. And he flew through that. You know, he really earned it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Dustin's skill was, I mean, his skills were actually incredibly aligned for Top Shot. He's not really wasn't a, you know, competitive shooter, but he had like 60 guns. He goes on his porch and he pulls different triggers, you know, and Top Shot's one of those venues where if you have good trigger control and sight, you know, and you can just kind of adapt, you're going to, you know, that's best training, where a specialist like me, I just shoot a Glock 19 and Glock 17 at the time. And that's kind of my one man guy, you know, really mono focused on that. The skills are transferable, but, you know, it's, you know, it's, you know, the broad range of a person like that, I think can, you know, can and does, you know, do, you know, compete exceedingly well. Yeah.
Now let's be clear. You know, you talked about punching Jake, but it was really because of Jake, you were able to come back into the competition once he left.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I have no animosity toward, you know, he's a character. He's a very bright guy, very calculated, you know, and
psychological and warfare.
You know, he's in psyops and all that stuff. But even he has, you know, I'll be honest, he has psyops on top of psyops. Like, he says that to get a reaction because of saying that, you know. So I mean, you know, he's he uses some profanity and such, but he's quite bright. In fact, he's a resident up here in Washington. He went to a private school down there, and one of our board members actually. So, you know, but, you know, he pushed buttons, and you know, he played the game and he went out on his own terms, you know, which is people say quit or whatever, but you know, he said, look, you know, I've, you know, he just, that was his game plan and he executed on that.
Now I do have one minor bone to pick, you know, with you, and then I'll turn it over to Jacob because I'm sure he has some other things he wants to ask. And that is because you did come back into the competition. You knocked out one of my buddies and that was Alex Charvet.
Oh, Alex. Yeah.
Alex and I are our friends. Yeah. He lives here in Conifer, Colorado. Jacob and I are both here in Colorado, and Alex and I have known each other for a few years now. So,
great.
So, yeah, you knocked him out, man. What's up with that? No.
Yeah, I know. That was actually, it's funny you mentioned that because, like, that was one of those days. That was, I tell you what, I'll just drill down on that because I think you'll find interest. I think it was that second to last episode or something, man. There was those balloons and I was shooting that Steyr SPP and it was like a 12 pound four stage trigger, something like crazy, something.
Right.
You know, I mean, not, well, whatever, what, I don't care. Right. Hey, that's why I train with the 12 pound cert trigger, you know, like I train with the New York trigger on my cert. Cause I'm a believer in that. So I was well trained. I was well trained for that, you know, but by no means optimized equipment. And then Matt Burkett trained me too as my mentor. So that was great to see Matt there. He was the expert for that one. And he really helped out with getting that stuff tuned in to be functional. And anyways, you know, this thing, you know, go backwards and shoot balloons. Well, Jesus, fellas, the stars aligned. Like it's, you know, that was a competition in my wheelhouse. And on top of that, like, you know, I was waiting forever. I don't, it's kind of funny. Like one of the reasons it took so dang long for Alex to get shooting is these damn cows would run on the deal. Right. So, you know, cause it's, you know, it's in this big kind of range pasture in Southern California. And so he'd be ready. He'd be up there, all this. I mean, huge infrastructure. The budget behind Top Shot is insane. And the number of people, like my buddy and wife came down there, was like, Jesus, this is a city out here. I thought it'd be like 12 guys in a crew, not 100, you know? So anyways, you know, these cows run in and then they chase them off and they kind of, you know, it's a range, right? So you got to like, you know, de-arm, bring them down. And then the cows walk back, going right to the same damn spot, you know? So it was just like, you know, back. But anyways, you know, Alex shot well, but boy, like I had a game plan. I went 1, 2, 3 balloons, transition, 1, 2, 3. And some of them, they're cooking out. They're probably 20, 30 yards, you know, with that pistol. And I went, I don't know, 21 shots. And I think I got all 20. It really, the stars aligned, you know, it was 3 hours of focus and prep and visualizing and stepping up there and hitting it, a good game plan, good execution. And it was already in skill sets I've trained over the years. And that was the highlight. If you want to talk about the low point, the shotgun, the highlight was that one where that was the pure essence of execution in my life. Plus all the pressure too, you know, like you get all those cameras, you know, there's 1.5, 2 million people effectively watching you. You know, it was properly channeled to perform as opposed to negative being, you know, joking or so to speak, right?
Nice. Yeah. Well, if I'm going to have a Top Shot question, it would be, which gun did you shoot that you wish you could have brought home?
Oh, boy. Probably the cannon, you know, like, you know, like shooting a big old cannon. So crazy, right? I mean, the percussion on that. You know, just like boom, you know, you can shoot a 50 or something like that. Or I've never shot a Vulcan, a 20 millimeter, but I assume it's, you know, something. But I think that's one of those experiences where you cherish. It's like, wow, I'm competing with the cannon against Jared, who's kind of a stud, you know, guy, you know, air marshal guy. And that was probably pretty memorable.
Nice. Before we started recording, me and Riley were talking about the corner shot. I was like, I think I gotta get my hands on one of those.
yeah, that's one of those frustrating that, yeah, they got to compete with that, and we never get to even, you know, compete with or play with that even, unfortunately, right.
That was, you
know,
just thrown at you.
yeah.
Good times. Jacob, go ahead.
I was going to ask for one last thing from Mike. I know we're running a little bit low on time. Earlier, I cut you off, Mike. You were talking about kind of the key fundamentals. You talked about grip. Then you talked about trigger control. And then you were about to talk about sight alignment. And that's when I cut you off. And I wanted to give you a chance to kind of finish that thought. I know it was like 20 minutes ago or something when we were talking. Yeah. But you know, talk about how sight alignment is kind of that third piece of the fundamental.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, sight alignment, follow through, and you know, sight alignment, sight picture, and of course, just to, by way of background for people out there not familiar with the terms or getting new into shooting, I mean, alignment is just keeping those sights aligned, right? Where, you know, that front post is in between that notch, you know, in between light on each side and level on the top. You know, very simple concept, right? And then sight picture is simply having the target behind those aligned sights. Okay. That's the, that is the simplicity and the far side of complexity of, sight alignment. Okay. It's understanding it. And, but if you have a good grip, I mean, sights are there. All right. I mean, you know, one of my drills I do is I shoot in I shoot in the dark where I can't see my sights, right? But I can kind of see the target. So boom, I present up, fearlessly present it, bam. And I get a sense where the hit was, but it was really more my grip doing most of the work, aligning those sights, you know? So, you know, I think sight alignment's critical. I think, let me dovetail this and we'll talk about it more later in the podcast on defensive shooting, because, you know, some research points, there's not a lot of research. That's a problem with true, defensive shooting, because, you know, some really advocate, you got to have your sights for liability purposes for all this. And I think there's an LAPD officer who had like, you know, three engagements, firearm engagements. He said he uses sights and a Weaver stance for all three of them. But then the counterpoint to that was, well, he kind of ambushed a person in all three of those, meaning it wasn't like a frontal attack, you know, like Pincus always, you know, like discusses, like, you know, boom, where you're, and I've done this in scenarios where, you know, you go into something and you're basically, you know, 90 degrees to the threat, right? Clearly the threat. Well, you pretty much just put your sights on them and cook off around. You know what I mean? Very different context than when the guy's pointed right at you. You know what I mean? And you're like, you cook up. Again, I'm getting a little bit off topic here, guys. But sight alignment, I think, is important. But it's more when to use your sights, because you should natural point of aim up close. Some guys are not into that. Or some instructors say, no, you always use your sights. I don't think that's totally realistic or necessary. And I think you can prove it to yourself. Don't take word for it. You know, get on the mats and get in your house and prove it to yourself. Get your cert and do 1,000 cold reps, you know, let's say out of, you know, grabbing distance, like 5 yards, with a combat accuracy target, you know, do 1,000 times from 1,000 different positions. And I bet you you're batting, you know, I bet you you're 950 out of 1,000 in a target zone, if not a full 1,000. And the ones that are outside are probably worth it, probably quote good enough, you know. And does that make sense, fellas? So That's why I kind of put sights third, it's a fundamental. You have to train it, but the bigger fundamental is knowing when to pull that focus back to 22 inches to use the sights. Mm. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's actually. I'm so glad I asked, because this is one of those things where Riley and I, between the two of us, we talk about this very thing all the time. We have some differing ways of saying the same thing, I think, sometimes. Yeah. Is that fair, Riley?
Oh, yeah.
And I think you put it in a way that we could both say, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you know, so I like to make fun of Jacob for, you know, he says, oh, don't use, he's like, I don't use sights. I don't ever use sights. And I'm like, well, but they're, you know, like I do. But my variation on that is you have to use sights, in my opinion, at a 30-yard shot. You know, but you gotta, as you mentioned earlier in the episode today, you gotta know where that point is of transition that you, and it should be learned too, to a point where it's basically like muscle memory. Like, you know, you get to a certain, you know, distance and like you just automatically transition from basically relying on that, you know, that good grip establishment, point shooting, and you transition over to sights, right?
And here's a trick. Let's go to the extremes and then work ourselves into the middle. Let's say you're at 4 yards, 5 yards, okay? And I don't say 1 yard, because then you're in retention shooting, right? Like a G-Raps close up, you know? But let's say like 4 yards, where you're going to do a full presentation shot, okay? So at that distance, you better grip it and rip it. I mean, you know, take the classic, you know, combat focus style, like Rob Pincus, you know, like, of, you know, extend out and just cook off the rounds, you know? Well, really you know, the bigger skill sets there, of course, are a lot of other things, you know, just clearing your garment and everything else. Now let's go to the other extreme. Let's go, like you said, let's go 20 yards. Cause that's even an extreme. 20 yards, 8-inch target, say an 8-inch plate. Okay. Well, yeah, you really got to probably put your sights on that, you know, that's getting very difficult to just purely, point shoot. All right. And besides, when you know, the little bit of time, when you're steadying yourself, you have the, you're going in parallel. That's what I call a sequencing. You're presenting out the gun. You have to dampen it a little bit tighter, even if you're point shooting. Well, hell, why not just pull your focus back while you're doing that? Get the crisp sight picture. The sight's already there because you got a good grip. It's all collaborative. And boom, and you're prepping the trigger because you already worked on that, right? You cook off the round. So you use your sights, but you did all those things, not in succession, one after the other, but in parallel, all those skill sets I mentioned. And why don't we make a note of that? We can talk more about that in the webinar if you guys want to jot down sequencing. That's the trigger word. So, you know, those are the extremes. You need sights. You don't need sights. Here's a question, guys. What about 12 yards, okay, or 10 yards at a, you know, 18 by 25 inch target? Do you need your sights then or not? You know, like, okay, and then you can even go one up on that. What about 12 yards when you're ambushing a, say it's defensive shooting, ambushing a threat in a scenario, okay, let's say you're using UTM or something, or our certs in the dojo, versus someone who's right on you, all right? That's even a further variable on that. If someone's pointing on, you know, at your wife at the jewelry store, but in a scenario like not a real life scenario like that, you're going to use your sights, right? Because you're ambushing the threat, right? If he's right at you coming, boom, you're going to natural point of aim it more, you know, even at the same distance, same target size. I threw a third variable in there, but point being is, let's just take that variable out, just the speed and accuracy component. You've got to get the reps. Every rep you get on at your home with random targets, use the pitcher frame at 7 yards. Use your whole door, all right, at 2 yards and rip it off fearlessly and just see how quick you get the shots off and see how it's not that much different than getting a little bit more accurate. You know, now do that crazy hard target all the way across the room, strong hand only, and see how much sights and trigger control you need. Every one of those reps, fellas, is a record in your intuitive database. You're putting another entry in your intuitive database. You know, I hear some stupid stuff, and this is dumb. Like they said, well, if the sights, the target is this much different than your sights and this size, this, then you use them or you don't. By the time you do that analysis, that more cognitive analysis, you forget it. You know, that's like trying to explain someone to do a free throw right in the middle of it. You can't do it. It has to be intuitive. You have to drive it to your subconscious competence, yeah, right? To go from consciously incompetent to unconsciously competent, you know, in that spectrum. The only way to do that, and I'll stress only, is you got to get the reps in. You got to get the exposure. You got to work at it at speed. Full speed, right? Using your permission to fail card to understand when you see that target, that distance, that circumstance, you're on familiar ground. You already have records in your intuitive database to pull up. So at 8 yards, I'm going to point shoot it, fellas, because I've got earned competence. I got earned confidence that I will point shoot it. I will get that. A newer shooter, there may be 5 yards. Maybe a more experienced shooter, Robbie Latham's 12 yards or 15 yards. Yep. You know what I mean, fellas? So that's the skill to have when to use your sights. And it's the thousands of records you put, which is your training, yeah, you put from your cert, you know, daily, you know, into your intuitive database.
Yeah. Great summer.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, good stuff, fellas. This has been excellent. We touched on some good meaty topics that people, you know, process this. I think, I wish this is the stuff I wish I would have heard 10 years ago. I wish I would have heard this podcast 10 years ago. I'm not joking. You know, I mean, not to be self, you know, inflated or anything, but this, you know, you always go back in time and think, God, you know, I could slap that kid, you know, a quarter century ago playing whatever yourself. You know?
Yeah, that is so true. So, you know, let's transition now to kind of wrapping up the show. And I'm going to give you, Mike, the opportunity. You know, we mentioned that today's episode is featuring the CERT training pistol, the shot indicating resetting trigger training pistol, which is, you know, we've certainly talked about it quite a bit here in the episode today. We talk about it in a lot of our episodes. We are such huge proponents quite frequently. I mean, it is on my desk right now. And I don't know how many times in a day that thing gets picked up and it gets used. And you guys say something like the battery should last like, I don't know, was it 40,000 shots or 50,000 or something? I don't know how many thousands of shots I've fired with my CERT pistol, but it's still going strong, and I've had it for a couple of years now. Anyway, so I'd like to give you the opportunity, Mike, of pitching the CERT pistol. This will be our little sponsor message, if that's okay. Can you do that?
Yeah. It's funny. Like I'm the worst salesman on that, you know, because I just, I can make a pitch. I guess it really starts with, you know, a product's just a piece of equipment, right? You know, the important things is in life is, you know, there's family and protecting the family on the defensive side. But I don't even look at the cert more like, I don't like fear-based marketing. I really don't. And there's too much in firearms industry, too much fear-based marketing, because as soon as you alleviate that fear, you're done. Your motivation's done, you know, and not to get too Zen-like here, but you know, fear, love, right? But I like love. I mean, I like having like passion for stuff. I like, you know, committing to, you know, a lifestyle of achievement and pistol crafts. One of those things, like there's so many darn benefits, even if you never compete with it, of getting fast and accurate. So, you know, I guess the pitch on it is just visualize yourself, you know, listener out there, and no matter where you are in your experience level, what your passions are, of being extremely competent with a pistol. You know, just almost as an end in itself. You know, speed for the sake of speed, accuracy for the sake of accuracy, competence just for the sake it feels good. You know, and the search, the tool for it. I mean, it's, you know, you never got, you can't do anything without having training being conducive and, in as much as you hate to say it, convenient. You know, if it's not convenient, it doesn't happen with our multiple and stretched obligations any, you know, a competent, successful, you know, person has. So that's just why, and honestly, the big part of that too is besides getting the product in their midst, is getting the training. I mean, I did a short training thing. It's grip.nextleveltraining.com, you know, and I'm very passionate about this. It doesn't sell certs. It's not about it. It's just about getting grip. I put a lot of resources behind making a course that's online. It's free. It's short, punchy, 17 videos, you know, so someone who's starting can start on the glide path of understanding grip. Because if you understand that, everything's going to fall in line. So my sales pitch here is invest in the training, invest in an NRA instructor locally, you know, local instructor, invest in the equipment, get the cert, you know, invest in your live fire time and make it sustainable. And it's totally doable without having to add a huge extra time chunk or monetary investment, you know, in yourself. So that, I guess that's my half-assed or effective or deep, I don't know, sales pitch.
No, I love it.
That's perfect. Grip.nextleveltraining.com.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes to a little, you know, course I built, pretty high production value in the videos, you know, free, easy, just kind of walk through, you know, I call them bathroom things too, about 90 seconds each. You know, go in the bathroom, bring your cert in there, make sure you don't have your live fire, so don't cook off around through it and at work and or whatever. And, you know, get the training and sneak it in.
Yeah. Hey, just because it popped into my head, Mike, I gotta ask, have you ever made the mistake of trying to get on a plane with a carry-on with a cert in it?
Yeah, I did.
What happened?
I was in an airport and I was actually doing this. It was kind of crazy. This week long course, you know, in this, you know, area, and well, this is in Arizona, and I happened to in the law enforcement officer happened to be he wasn't in the course, but he was kind of a support member. He knew of it, you know. Anyways, so we basically I think I donated the cert to the, you know, the agency, and you know, no harm, no foul. And actually the funny, I'll just say this cause it is what it is. I don't think there's any security risk, right? But it happened to go through and they happened to have to run it through again because what I got busted with my tuna fish. I left a tuna fish in there and the tuna fish gets pulled out of the bag. And then that extra cert, I think I brought down 18 and I had one and I, what the heck is that? You know, oh, there it is, you know, with that computer bag. And so, yes, to make a short story long, I've made that mistake, approached it with humility. And I'm not on the no-fly list as far as I know.
That's a great story. And especially because I like how you got busted because of the tuna fish.
That does make it all come together. Yeah.
Yeah. I can think of an inappropriate remark now, but yeah, I'll refrain. Yeah.
So back to kind of where we were, though. Great pitch on the CERT pistol. I mean, we pitched it before. We pitch it, like I said, probably almost every episode, at least in some form or fashion, because we are such huge believers. And if you'd like to learn more, you can find them in our online store at usafirearmtraining.com. You can also go to nextleveltraining.com and check out, you know, Mike and everything that he does with his organization over there, which is just fantastic. And tons of great content that he's just made available for free. Training content, dry fire, practice drills, all sorts of stuff. Great, great, great stuff. Mike, and you're really doing a great job. You mentioned good production value of the grip.nextleveltraining.com series there. And a lot of the things I've seen from you have really great production behind them. So you're really doing a great job and stepping up your game. So we really appreciate it, sir.
A lot more to come, fellas. So I mean, wait till you see 2017 plan. Wow, we're gonna blow the doors off in creating content. Yeah,
we're looking forward to it, and also looking forward to seeing you at SHOT Show. So
excellent. Yes,
I assume you'll be there.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Oh, cool. Yes, sir.
Well, here's the other thing, though, too. Before I forget, I want to make sure that we mention, and listeners, you've heard us mention it in the episode so far up to this point, and that is talking about this webinar that we're going to have come Thursday evening. The webinar, by the way, is something that we're calling Guardian Nation Live, which is part of a new membership that we've started and created called Guardian Nation, which is intended for all those of you that see yourselves as guardians, as sheepdogs, as, you know, you're doing everything you can to be prepared, to be knowledgeable, to be trained, to be responsible, and this is the place for you. If you'd like to check that out, please go to usafirearmtraining.com/GN. Now, one piece of that, just one piece, and we've got a crap load of stuff planned for members in Guardian Nation, but one small piece of that is only members will have access to, starting in November especially, only members are going to have access to our monthly webinars that we call Guardian Nation Live. And these special webinars, about 60 to 90 minutes long, are going to be featuring top professionals in the gun industry, in the training industry, in the manufacturing industry, you know, in our industry. You want to connect with, see face-to-face these top professionals, that's where you're going to find it. And Mike Hughes is our first guest on our first ever Guardian Nation Live webinar, and we thank you so much for agreeing to do that, and we're so looking forward to Thursday evening. Now, that webinar starts, don't miss it, folks, it starts Thursday evening at 7 p.m., Mountain Time. That would be 6 p.m. Pacific on the Pacific Coast and 9 p.m. on the Atlantic Coast in Eastern Time. Don't miss it. And you've got to get signed up for ahead of time, where you're not even going to get the link on where to go to view the webinar. You'll have an opportunity to, like I said, see Jacob, see myself, and also see Mike Hughes face-to-face. And Mike, it sounds like you're kind of planning on demonstrating and showing some things. I think you said you're going to make sure you had your CERT pistol with you and stuff. I think, you know, Jacob and I both, we'll all make sure we have our CERT pistols for that event. Yeah. So we're so looking forward to it. And Mike, we gave you a question earlier. Here's another question I'd like you to think about as far as answering during that webinar. And I think this is, actually, I'm going to give you two questions to think about. Number one is, you know, we spend all this time training for things that are, you know, events. When we talk about defensive shooting in particular, we spend a lot of time training for events that are unlikely to occur to us. But they do occur, and people are impacted every day in this country by situations where it's required or it's necessary for them to, whether it's save themselves or save their family members or whatever, to use defensive shooting skills. Given that we can't practice the live thing, like actually being put in a situation where our life's in danger and we can actually practice that and what it feels like, I want you to think about, for our webinar Thursday, tomorrow, how do you think we can best prepare for that which we all fear so much? And secondly, and I think it's related to that, is how, if at all, do you think we can qualify someone as being prepared? Like, is there ever a point when we think or we know that we are, in fact, prepared? So two things I think that are interesting to consider and to think about there. And I'm looking for your answers on those questions tomorrow evening in the webinar. And one other...
Very enthusiastic answer that, very much. Great. We'll have some amazing discussion on that.
Perfect. And then here's one other final question. And I think it's kind of related to that, because as we get prepared, we run the risk of, I mean, developing confidence in our skills is certainly very important, but we do run the risk of becoming overconfident. So I want you to be thinking about, what is the biggest mistake or mistakes that you see seasoned shooters make because of overconfidence? So there you go. There's another one. Jacob, anything else you want to add about the webinar tomorrow night?
I'm just really looking forward to it. For those of you who are listening right now, we tried to pick a time that would be convenient. We know it's last minute, but yeah, put this on your calendar. Do what it takes to be there. You're going to be able to present your questions. So you've heard some of the questions that Riley and I have kind of pre-thought out that we're planning on asking Mike. But if you participate, if you attend the webinar, you can ask your questions. So come ready, come prepared, bring note and pen. And for those who register for the webinar and are part of Guardian Nation, not only will you have access live, but you'll be able to watch the recording, but I'm telling you, you're going to be, you want to be there live so that you can ask questions as they come to your mind.
Yeah. And Jacob, why don't you mention, just so that it's clear for everybody, how and where do you get signed up for the webinar and or
yep.
a Guardian Nation?
Yep. Great question. So essentially you go to the link that Riley already gave, which is www.usafirearmtraining.com/GN. GN,
Golf,
just the two letters run together, right? No spaces. It stands for Guardian Nation. That's going to take you actually to our Guardian Nation product page. But here's the trick. If you look on that page, there is a coupon code toward the top that if you use that coupon code, you can sign up for Guardian Nation for just $1. So you pay $1 and you're going to have access to this webinar as well as all the other benefits and features of Guardian Nation for the next 30 days. It's just $1 for 30 days and you're going to be able to participate in that webinar. So I think that's a small price to pay. And that's our way of making it as accessible as possible while we're kicking it off.
Yeah. Good stuff. So, wrapping it up here, and Mike, we always do a segment, actually two segments, called Pick of the Week and Up Next. And I didn't prep you on this at all, so I know and I apologize. I'm going to give you a minute to think about this. But a Pick of the Week can be anything that just lately has totally rocked your world, you know, as far as like a product or something. It could be a book, it could be a firearm, it could be a holster, it could be a training tool, it could be anything or whatever, you know. So Jacob, I'm going to have go first and then I'll go, and that should give you a little bit of time to think, Mike, about your pick of the week. Is that cool?
That's great. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I got two things if I could, and they're big, huge things.
Please.
Go for it.
Okay, so I'm like all pumped up. I want to hear about Mike's pick of the week. But you know, and normally I'm the one that has something completely non-firearm related, but I was reviewing some Top Shot episodes in the last couple of days, as you might imagine, and my pick of the week is the corner shot. I need one, like, immediately. I must buy one before the end of the year. I just don't know if I can continue to go on as a human and not own the corner shot.
Jacob had,
it looked that cool.
Jacob has a need to shoot around corners, apparently.
I don't know if I ever will, but I absolutely must practice doing that immediately.
There you go.
Nice.
Good.
My pick this week is the Azden Pro XD wireless lavalier mics. I know I'm usually the guy that picks something more firearm related, and Jacob picks something sort of off the wall. But you know, we've been producing actually a lot of video recently. We're getting ready to do even more, and we picked up these wireless lav mics so that we can, you know, step up our game with our, not just our video quality, but also with our audio quality. And these Azden Pro XD wireless mics, you buy it, it's a transceiver and a receiver. Yeah, I've been very happy with them so far. And so you'll be seeing some video coming from us soon where we're using those mics so we can make sure and ensure that our viewers and listeners are getting the best audio quality possible so they can understand everything that is, you know, either being done or explained or whatever. So looking forward to getting a lot more video content for you guys. So now I'm going to turn it back to you, Mike. Let's hear it.
Well, I got really two things, fellas. You know, first thing is I want to go really big. Cause like right now, like, you know, like, hey, what's the, you know, everyone's on the mind with the elections and this and that, you know? So I feel almost we've got to talk about it to some degree. Right. And there's one area I just think my pick of the week is a national debt. as mundane as it sounds and everything.
I love it.
Dreaming for content related to curbing the national debt, or no joke, and I don't want to sound like an alarmist or a whack job survivalist, or we will have to go to guns because this society will collapse, you know, within our grandchildren's time if we do not curb that. It's like, that's my pick of the week. People, like, let's cry for that, okay?
I thought you don't believe in fear mongering and marketing. But what you say is truth. Absolutely, sir.
Yeah, let's get her dialed in. And the other thing, I guess, is in the 114th Congress, the HR 402, National Concealed Carry, Right to Carry. You know, if there's one thing that we can do, I mean, national debt, let's just raise awareness. But what's my pick of the week? Hey, what can we really, really do? And I was privileged and honored to listen to, Sheriff Clark at a USCCA function here. And I just loved it. I was so enthused. I'm just parroting him, really, going off, what he says. Let's just consult our congressman, our senator, and I think it might be House of Representatives right now, and say, look, get this going. Get the national right to carry going. All right. I think that bill's still alive and such. I'm not totally up to date on that, but that is something we can all do. We can execute on that. It's within our realm of control. It's going to move the needle. It's a collective grassroots thing, which we can look back on and think, yes, I helped contribute to that. So that's my pick of the week, the national right to carry.
Cool.
Love it.
Wow.
Yep. And we should put, Riley, let's put a link to HR 402 in the show notes.
Yes, sir. I have noted that down. Finally, Mike, anything you got coming up next? Anything you're working on right now that you can share with listeners or that is exciting for you? What's on your radar?
Boy, we do. We have something coming out. I think I might just hold back just a little bit because we're not fully, up in our marketing plan on that. I do have something, but I'm going to kind of keep it behind the curtain.
Is there
whatever it is? I'm excited.
Is there any way that listeners can stay in touch as far as they can be among the first to find out about that? Is it go back to the website, check it out occasionally, or be on your
sign up for the newsletter? We're really getting legs on our newsletter. And even starting to segment it out to where your passion is, and we're working heavily on the back end and getting a lot of our old content up with our new website and a ton more new content. So, that's our biggest thing. I feel handcuffed. I am so excited to get the content out there, and we're building so much infrastructure, putting so much money into, getting really good substantive stuff. Hopefully it sells some damn search so we can keep that going.
Yep, you nailed that. It's always one of those things in this industry. I'm so glad to hear you say that. You said it, jokingly, Mike, but me and Riley talk about this all the time. It's like we're doing what we do because we love what we do, and we think that our people, our tribe, our community needs what we're doing. But then it's almost always that afterthought, like, wait a minute, like, How are we going to make money doing this so we don't all have to go get real jobs?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's all going to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we fairly monetize. I have no compunction selling. I said I was a bad salesman before. I'm really not. I that passion comes through. People get it. They buy it. It's and your guys' passion. And so, yeah, buy a cert, support it. Buy two. Sign up the $38 a month for your podcast stuff. My biggest thing is this. Like, people shouldn't focus on buying or put our competition's indirect competition. It's a new TV they get at a big box store somewhere. Don't buy another TV. You don't need another 6 inches on your diagonal. Use what you got and spend money, invest your time, invest yourself in content like you're provided and equipment like we provide, So that's my way of I guess going to sleep at night with shameless plugs and a relentless sales.
Excellent. All is good.
Nice. Jacob, how about you? What's up next for you, buddy?
For us, I think it's just continuing on with Guardian Nation and that launch. We've been preparing so much content, you know, skills, drills, obviously the webinar that's coming up, but also a bunch of other related things. We're going to be shipping out, this is something that's really exciting about Guardian Nation, is we're going to be shipping out once a quarter a box of gear. So anyone who's been a member of Guardian Nation for 3 months will get shipped the quarterly box every quarter. So it's really exciting. So we've been curating different gear that we believe in, that we think is really valuable, and getting ready to be able to ship that out to everybody who's a member. The first shipment will actually be in February. The shipment dates will be every February, May, August, and November.
Yep, that sounds right. Yep, so excited. And we literally have one of our team members spending every free moment searching for, curating, handpicking, selecting what's going to go in our very first quarterly box. We hope to have some really, really good stuff in there. Absolutely. Good stuff, Jacob. And for me, I'm also assisting in that effort, of course, but I'm still practicing for American Marksman. I'm approaching the 2 month mark. And in case people don't know, like, supposedly this is actually going to be broadcast on TV on the Outdoor Channel or Sportsman Channel. I can't remember which. Maybe both. Who knows? Mike, you mentioned, you know, kind of the pressure and things and having cameras on you and crap like that. I honestly have no idea how that's going to impact me. So Jacob and I have got to get busy putting together a lot of training videos and things so that I get as much camera time practice as I can, as well as shooting time practice.
Let me give you one tip on that. I learned from Mike Seeklander. I took his class. I can close with one tip. Breathe in for six, hold for two, exhale for six. That's
tactical breathing.
You can cut this out if you want, you know, or put it in there, but right away went to Top Shot. You're waiting around. You did a deal the day before and you're, hey, get in this van. It's blacked out. You don't know. And you just you feel like a victim. You are a victim. You have no, you know, because you don't have any choice, right? You know, so you're feeling victim status, right? It's like, God, I hate this. Anyways, then you walk down and all of a sudden there's like 110 people, like in a huge, you know, camera crews, A through K, it's, you know, massive production. It's like, holy smokes. Say, Mike Hughes, Cliff Walsh, come down. You know, Cliff's a national champion revolver shooter.
Right.
You know, Smith & Wesson, 500. And I was like, holy shit, you know, this is on, you know, my heart rate, it went to 120. I'm not kidding you. You know, I'm not going to feign, you know, coolness under pressure. I was like, oh man. But I remember that. Okay, what's my tool? I can use. Okay, I'll breathe in for six, hold for two, exhale for six. But you know, I did that twice, and then it went well. I out-competed Cliff on that. But yeah.
No, that's great.
That's a pro tip right there. That's good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I learned it from Seeklander. It was one of Michael's courses. Yeah,
Mike is great, and
always a stud. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So it's funny, you know, going back to earlier too. I just got to get this out there because you mentioned it, and I thought it was so interesting. I asked Alex Charvet a while back, you know, a couple years ago. I said, Alex, what was the hardest thing about Top Shot? And he was like, oh, all of the sitting around and waiting. So it's so funny to hear the exact same thing said, but it's so true. People don't understand that going into production of shows like that is just so much. It's really the production. It's less the actual event and shooting. It's the production is where all the work is. So
yeah, it's a ton. And then with reality TV too, they got to capture it. So you can't talk. You got to basically be self-quarantined until you're in an environment where they can capture the interactions, which I totally understand for the production of something like that. So,
yeah.
You know, for someone like me who just thrives off stimulus, to be so deprived and I'm serious. Like, I don't want to sound like a whiner or I would have rather have done anything, you know, 20 mile hikes a day, something, you know what I mean? Like just then that kind of mundane, yeah.
Oh man. Well, great. Thanks again so much, Mike, for being on the podcast with us today. It's been a pleasure. It's been educational. It's been informative. It's been inspirational even. And we are just super excited
for tomorrow night. So we will see you again then. We hope to see all of you, our listeners, also at that same webinar. Don't forget, go to usafirearmtraining.com/GN to get signed up. Don't miss it. And yeah, there you go. I mean, I think we're going to wrap it up here. So we're going to say goodbye to everybody. Jacob, last words?
Just another big thanks to Mike, and look forward to seeing everybody on the webinar. You're going to see my ugly face, and Riley's, and Mike will make us all look good.
And Mike, anything last words you want to throw out there?
Thanks very much, gentlemen. I think this is great. I think we touched on some good, deep topics. And yeah, and I guess if there's one point trail to go down, if people are interested in what I said, it's at grip.nextleveltrain.com. I guess that's my plug. It's a training plug, you know, to really hone in your skills in that key fundamental.
And you can bet I'll be checking that out. So, and this is Riley with USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast. We will see you tomorrow night and also on next Monday's episode of the podcast as well. Take care. See you later.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.